Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Sherry Turkle, a professor at MIT, created a little bit of a sensation when she wrote a book called Alone Together, which offered up the hypothesis that our gadgets are really changing us, that we've grown so attached to them that sometimes we just plain ignore the important things that are happening right in front of us. Sherry Turkle is the author of Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Thanks so much for coming into the studio.
My pleasure.
I mean, I guess one question I have is, why are we so romanced by our gadgets? They seem to have this siren call for us that, you know, no matter what happens, we've got to pick up that phone or answer that text.
Well, I think we're like young lovers who are so smitten with our technologies that we think that too much talking will spoil the romance. It's like we know that it's kind of bad for us, but we don't want to talk about the problem. What I find the main motivation is, why people can't not, is they feel they're missing something. People tell me that they feel that they can't not know who wants them. I taught a course on memoir last semester, and a group of students came to me and said, you know, we're texting during class and it kind of bothers us because the other students in the class are talking about the stories of their lives. And it bothers us that we're texting under the table while our colleagues are talking about the stories of their lives. So we talked about it in class. So they basically said, the idea that somebody wants me, I need to see who wants me.
It's a compulsion.
And they feel a pressure to respond to who wants them. One girl talked about when her friend texts her, she feels such pressure that she has to go to the bathroom. And this is a student not from MIT, but from another school in the area who says she regularly leaves her lecture courses, Nobel Prize winning scientist teaching it or not, and goes to the bathroom and sits there for 5 or 10 minutes responding to incoming texts because she feels compelled to respond.
Well, you tell this story in Alone Together where you said to kids in your class, I'd really like you to use a regular paper notebook and take notes with a pen or pencil. And some kids said, gosh, I'm so relieved that you said that.
Yes, yes. Because the pressure of knowing somebody wants me and not responding is almost too much to bear.
Okay, so if the relationship we have with technology is like young lovers, does that mean it's going to get more mature and we're going to realize, well, we don't need to always respond to that person?
That's what I'm starting to invest. That's my kind of, you know, Alone Together is kind of tells, I think, the beginning of the story, the technology as we sort of first took it on. And now I'm trying to investigate as it matures and we get more used to it. And I think we're at a crossroads. The question you ask is exactly the right one. Because what I'm finding is some people say something like, when my cell phone breaks, iPhone breaks, I bring it into the Apple store, you know, I've dropped it in the toilet, it's out of my life for a couple of days, I'm so relieved. I have no excuse. I'm so relieved. So even as they're telling this story of compulsion, that they've got to have it, when for some reason they don't have it, they basically feel the pressure is off. And the question is, what are people going to do with this information that we've kind of taken too much on ourselves? Nobody wants to get rid of it. People want to live with it more maturely.
I feel a little bit that way with taking an airplane. You feel like that's 4 or 6 hours where you can really read a book. And now, as Wi-Fi comes on airplanes, I think, oh, man, that's like the last place where I can really read a book and not have to worry about, you know, who wants
and
to contact me.
A lot of people feel that way about airplanes, that the last place that you could retreat, your excuse is gone. But I think that that's kind of the theme of my current research, is that people start out by saying, you know, I love it, I couldn't do without it, I couldn't do without it. And by the end of the conversation, they're saying, when I have to do without it, I feel such relief And how can I find some kind of greater balance? So I end up feeling optimistic would be too strong, but cautiously optimistic, because I feel that people are having an experience where they're kind of feeling like something has to change. I interviewed somebody who, this is kind of funny, he'd invented for his business a new kind of social media platform that could, you know, get everybody together and integrate the business all on social media. And he's talking about how he's busy all the time. He has 15 things going. And then he describes this and he says, but sometimes I come to the office and because of this social media, you know, nobody's at the office. And he just looks around and there's nobody there and everything's buzzing. And he just looks around and he says, what have I done? I'm so lonely. And it's at one of those same moments of everything's buzzy, he's multitasking, he's on 15 different social media platforms, he helped to invent it. What have I done? I'm sitting alone in an office.
I'm Kara Miller. We're talking to Sherry Turkle, the author of Alone Together. And one of the interesting things you look at is people who feel like a lot of their friends, I mean, we could put this in air quotes, right? A lot of their friends are maybe not even people they know. They're people in the online world, so they feel intimate with those people, and yet they're kind of alone, too, because they're not really people that they know.
Yes. Now, some of those relationships are very fulfilling, and I think you have to give those relationships their due. But more and more, I think people are using social media to connect and keep connected with people they really know, but who are living at a distance, who are close members of their family, but at a distance. Things are evolving to make a little bit less of those early images of I have thousands and thousands of close friends, but they're my internet friends. I think we're starting to get a little bit smarter because the ties that really bind are the people who we've met face to face. Study after study is showing that the ties that make us less depressed, the ties that make us, that lift us up, are the face-to-face communication, really through all age groups. And I think that people are starting to have that experience with social media and realizing that it has its place, but that using it to keep in touch with people you, quote, really know is one of the smartest ways to use it.
Some of this stuff is kind of scary. You tell the story of, you know, a mother who goes and picks her teenage daughter up from dance lessons or from school,
yeah,
but she has her eye all the,
yes,
time on her phone, and her daughter knows it, like,
yes,
really notices that she is not the center,
absolutely,
of attention.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a generation that has grown up experiencing technology as the competition. In our playgrounds today, you see parents, the kids are sort of waving and they're just, you know, they're gesticulating, you know, look at me on the slides, look at me on the jungle gym. And you I'm sitting there as an observer, but I kind of want to go over and shake the parents. Would you put down your phone and look at your kid? You know, and playground accidents are up because parents are not looking up and paying attention to their kids. You know, one of the best advice I give parents is to create sacred spaces, really at the playground, in the kitchen, in the dining room, where you really don't use technology and you use that time. You force yourself to give full attention to your child because that's just so tremendously important.
So what's the age that you define as these kids who've always grown up with technology, the sort of digital natives? What are the ages, would you say, of those kids?
Well, kids who were 8 years old are being given phones. Six-year-olds are being given phones, and that's been going on since 9/11. I mean, that's really the problem, is 9/11 was the turning point because people had the sense that it was an emergency, and the solution to that sense, that terrible sense of emergency. You couldn't reach your kid. There was a technical solution. Give your child a phone. That happened during 9/11. Never again were you not going to be able to reach your kid. And that was the time when it became culturally permissible to give your child a phone. So it's very hard to say what,
right,
is that, you know, how old is a child now? What's important is now that it is not unusual to give 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and 7-year-olds phones. And for children as young as 2, I call it the pass back, that when a kid is misbehaving, a parent will pass back a phone in the car, pass back a phone to just come here, play with my iPhone. And this is actually not a good thing, because these are ages when children need to, first of all, be talking to you. Children learn how to have conversations with themselves by having conversations with others. So it's a way to shut down that capacity for self-reflection. That's very important.
Okay, so then what is it doing to these kids? Both that parents are competing, you know, have these competing attentions, the kid and technology, and that kids have technology all as part of their... How is it changing this generation? How are they different?
Well, I think the most important thing has to do with conversation. Because what this technology does is shut down conversation when children need it most. Kids learn how to have conversation with themselves by having conversation with other people, in the first instance with their parents. If your parent is texting at breakfast, they're not talking to you. If you're texting, if you're a kid and you're texting at breakfast, you're not talking. So you're losing that opportunity not just to converse and learn about conversation, but you're learning how to have conversations with yourself, which is the basis for self-reflection, which for children is the bedrock of self-development. So I'm making two very different points. On the one hand, you're not learning conversation. On the other hand, being constantly given these devices is shutting down a capacity for, or not developing a capacity for solitude, because you're being given stuff that takes you away, that stimulates you, and you're not learning how to gather yourself. And solitude is so important because I like to say, if you don't teach your children how to be alone, they'll only know how to be lonely. Children need to learn that ability to gather themselves without being given a phone, without being given all of this stuff, reflect, know who they are, because solitude is the capacity to then reach out to other people with a real interest in who they are, not just to use them to kind of fill in the spaces of your insufficient self.
Well, it's also the opportunity to think big thoughts. Yes. And if whenever you're kind of bored, you're always on the phone, which you pretty much always can be, you're never really thinking through your day, what you could be doing, how X connects to Y.
Yes.
You're always taking that opportunity to call somebody or...
Solitude is the basis for relationship and also for creativity. I mean, that's the two parts of solitude, cognitive and emotional. But the phone, which, you know, in its place, these smartphones are great, is paradoxically closing down both the capacity for relationship and for creativity, if used inappropriately. And that's not good. But we're not thinking of any of this when we have a kid in the back seat of the car and we say, hey, play with my phone.
Right.
And they say, great.
Now, do some of the most innovative, creative people in the country realize this? We have read articles, for example, about how in Silicon Valley there are schools with no technology allowed. And I wonder if some of the people at the forefront of all of this technology look around and think, yeah, but there's other stuff that needs to be developed here in my child's mind.
I think they do. I think they do. And I think that some of the most creative people who are developing this stuff are also pursuing meditation. They're also pursuing mindfulness. They're also pursuing all kinds of Eastern and reflective arts and are saying, I need a technology break. That's why also I'm kind of optimistic, because I think there's a lot of talk now, as opposed to a couple of years ago, about not criticizing technology, but putting it in its place. You know, I mean, just trying to talk about, I mean, look, you're doing a program about this.
Right.
I mean, I think all of a sudden it's kind of become okay to say, we've had this stuff for a while, we've fallen in love with it, it's natural, and now let's just talk about putting it in its place. And I think it's in part because there's been an overreach. One of the most interesting examples of an overreach is a recent Facebook commercial. I mean, I've got to say, you know, Facebook sometimes does overreach in interesting ways that I think kind of, and I don't know if they're still showing the commercial because it was such an overreach. It's a dinner table conversation. This is universally known to be a good thing. I mean, it's been proven at study after study that dinner table conversations lower juvenile delinquency. They lower the rate of divorce. I mean, everything good follows from dinner table conversations. And Auntie starts to say some boring things. She starts to talk about buying a chicken.
Uh-oh.
And as soon as she starts to talk about buying a chicken, the 19, 20-year-old girl takes out her phone, and all of a sudden she goes to Facebook, and all of a sudden the table is populated with all of the other things that she's finding in Facebook. There are ballet dancers, there are snow fights, there are football games and baseball games. And essentially Facebook is taking an anti-conversation at dinner table stand. And you watch this commercial and you realize that something utopian, dinner table conversation, has been turned into something dystopian. In other words, the dystopian is being presented as the utopian. The utopian is now dystopian. You kind of have lost your balance. Am I watching something good being presented as bad? Am I watching bad? And you realize how much we've lost our way.
You've lost your real family and you got your virtual friends.
Yeah, exactly.
At the table.
But this can't be for something good. So they're saying this is good, but this is really bad. So I think we're at a point where we're really starting to take stock again, which is what's making me optimistic.
So tell me about yourself. What devices do you carry with you?
I carry an iPhone, but often I don't. And I'm a writer, so I'm not very far from my laptop for writing purposes.
Okay. And to what degree has technology, has email, have devices been a romance for you?
I've learned that I'm a very bad texter. I have a daughter who's 22, and she says that I have not mastered the art of writing texts because apparently I will write something like great. And in text world, my lack of putting in softenings can be frightening. And it makes her feel like she needs to immediately call me because it means that I might be angry.
What is a softening?
A softening would be exclamations and extra R's. And so apparently I'm not ready for prime time.
Okay.
In my text. I've learned that I need to stay away from texting, certainly with my daughter, because I cause alarm by my sort of brusque standard English use in texting. And my email is equally kind of standard English. So I've learned that I've brought my writerliness into my e-communication in a way that other generations find distressing.
I've learned that I am also apparently not a good texter because I also would like write great, period.
Right, exactly.
Do you think adults are any better at dealing with this technology than their children? You know, you and I, I'm sure, have both been to conferences where people traveled a long way, you know, plane flights of 12 hours to get somewhere. And they sit at the conference and they write their emails, which they didn't really have to travel across the country or the world to do.
This is a wonderful question because this digital native, digital immigrant question or adult teenager is so rampant in the culture, you know. And I have found, that adults can become smitten just as much as young people, and in some cases perhaps more, because I think young people have found their own ways to navigate, whereas adults can get really lost. So I think that we moved too quickly. I think adults can do things like not know how to text, not be good texters because they don't know the language. But I think that the issue of how to make this work in your life is something that adults do not have a lock on. No.
Sherry Turkle, professor at MIT and author of Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Sherry Turkle is the author of Alone Together and a professor at MIT. You can learn more about her work at our website, innovationhub.org. And if you go to iTunes or SoundCloud, you can hear or share this entire interview, as well as the interview before this with Nicholas Carr and Cliff Nass about how well we really do with multitasking. And I'll bottom line it for you here, it's not that well. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.